comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very, very first time this evening, and I'm delighted you're here. I think you'll be delighted as well, and I hope you make a habit out of it and come back each and every night, Monday through Friday, for The Kevin Smith Show. If you haven't subscribed to the K-Files E-Zine, go over to my website, click the button that says K-Files E-Zine, and subscribe. It's free. And this is our free weekly newsletter, comes out each week, and there's no reason for you to be in the dark. Now, I've just got to report something to you here that is weird. I mean, this is really strange. And it comes from Israel. It's in the news over there. It hit the news yesterday on the internet, and it's just weird. But it, that's what this show's about, right? So here's the deal. There's a town on the seacoast in Israel by the name of Kirvat Yam. And in this town, people go to this town so that they can go to the beach, right? Dozens of people have reported seeing a mermaid. Yeah, I know your mind is saying, yeah, right. Well, a lot of people have seen this thing, and they have reported it to the authorities there. According to a spokesman for the town council there, and I quote, "Many people are telling us they are sure they've seen a mermaid, and they are all independent of each other." One of the witnesses there is Shlomo Cohen. He was one of the first to identify the mysterious creature as a mermaid, according to IsraelNationalNews.com. And the town council has responded by saying, tell you what, we're going to put up $1 million prize for someone that can get a photograph or even capture this mermaid. And they absolutely swear that this is not a ploy, a marketing ploy, to get tourists to come to Kirvat Yam. They say it's a real phenomena. They are not sure what it is, but a lot of people are seeing it. Now, here's how it was described by Shlomo Cohen. He said, "I was with friends when suddenly we saw a woman laying on the sand in a weird way. At first, I thought she was just another sunbather, but when we approached, she jumped into the water and disappeared. We were all in shock because we saw she had a tail. At least five of us saw it, and we all couldn't believe it." Well, do mermaids exist, apparently, at Kirvat Yam in Israel? The answer is yes. At least that's what the witnesses think, and they all swear they have seen it. Jim Mars is my guest this evening, and we are going to rock and roll with Jim Mars on the other side of this break. Don't go away. my guest this evening is Jim Mars, and he's been with us before. It's good to have him back with us. Jim Mars is an award-winning journalist, well-known throughout the United States and around the world. He has made a habit of rocking boats and shaking foundations with his in-depth investigative reporting. As I said, he's been my guest before, but it has been a long time, too long, and it is my pleasure to be able to say, Jim Mars, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hey, Kevin, it's always great to be with you. I hope you're not as far as deep in a hole as you sound like.
No, and we hear you just fine. Jim, before we get into the real heart of what we're going to be talking about tonight, I've got a question I want to ask you about the media, because you are a journalist. Throughout your career, you have tackled all kinds of topics, you've tackled all kinds of issues, you've investigated all sorts of things and reported on them, and regardless of the topic, you've always treated each topic with journalistic integrity and professionalism.
I try.
But in mainstream media, most of those guys won't even consider touching some of the topics that you've written about. And I think they're important topics. And my question is, why do they decide to impose an information blackout on the public by just not reporting on these things?
Well, it's because we have freedom of the press in this country, you see, Kevin. Whoever owns the press, you know, is free to put or not put whatever they want to in there. So freedom of press belongs to the guy that owns the press,
mm-hmm.
owns the TV network. And right now, everything that we see and hear from magazines, outdoor advertising, cable, music, TV, movies, satellites, publishing, magazines, everything we see and hear is now under the control of five corporations.
Just five? Well, I think it's a sad day for the country, but I am glad that you're out there and that your voice continues to be heard. And I just hope that you keep doing what you're doing, and would hope that a few others would join you.
Well, thank you, Kevin, and let me tell you, I'll tell you why I am the way I am is because way back in the days of the old Republic, when I was in college and was studying as a journalism major, I was actually taught that I was supposed to be looking for the truth as best I could, and we all know how elusive the truth is, but I was supposed to be looking for it as best I could and then reporting it to the public. Fool that I was, I really bought into that. I really thought that's what I was supposed to be doing. And I was a little bit chagrined when I began to work as a full-time newspaper reporter because I had, as I had expected, there was a great reluctance on the part of public officials and corporate officials to tell the truth, okay? I was prepared for that. But I was not really prepared for the fights I'd have to get into with my own editors because they were so afraid of offending an advertiser or offending a prominent political official. So, you know, it was an uphill fight. Well, how do you know that? Have you got three sources? Can you prove this? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and then I turn around, and of course the government would hand out some pronouncement with little or no support, and they'd run it on the front page. Did not seem fair to me, but that's all right. I fought with that. But the real shock came when I found out that there was a certain portion of the public out there that's basically saying, don't tell me that. I don't want to hear that. That's negative. Tell me the good news. Well, of course, you know, that came as kind of a surprise to me, and unfortunately, that's where we are. Now, today, in today's media, you have these pretty faces on television who are called news anchors. In England, they more correctly are called presenters. They present what they're given. You have radio personalities, and I have very few real newsmen on radio. They're mostly just shock jocks and talk show hosts and da-da-da. And then when you get to there's very few, precious few, really trained and devoted journalists left. And the big reason for that, I suppose, is that there's, as I said, there's no journals anymore. There's only corporate advertising distribution systems. And if you have to pick up a little news along the way, well, just so much the better for you.
Well, I think it's a very, very sad day. I think you mentioned back in the days of the old republic. I'm not sure exactly what you were referring to, but I think probably the same thing I refer to, and that is the republic as we know it is dead.
Yeah.
And we're living in the shadow and shell of what was the Republic of the United States of America.
That's right. I'm old enough to remember when politicians actually referred to the Republic. When's the last time you heard a national politician refer to the Republic? They don't even talk about it anymore because we no longer have a Republic. We have an empire.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. All right. I want us to jump in feet first into the topic that we'll focus on here this evening. Now, the last time you were here, we talked a lot about aliens and their possible agenda here on the planet, what they're up to, and how are they going about it. But tonight, there is a completely different topic that I want to focus on. It's a very serious topic, Jim, and it's one that may, and I want to stress, may have some alien connection. And that is a topic that some of our listeners have heard about, for some, for many. This will be the first time they've heard it. The topic of prion. So start us at ground zero and sort of educate us about what is prion.
The prion attack. Yes. Okay, well, now this, keep in mind, I don't make no claims that I'm a medical expert, so if I get some details wrong, you'll have to forgive me. But all I'm doing is going to tell you the story, and then, hey, it's up to your listeners to go and see if they can verify all this. But it goes back to the days of the Nazis in World War II. And they were very interested in finding out, you know, a biological weapon that would really work. And I believe, according to information I have, that they were the first to isolate this microplasm, I guess is what you could call it. It's also called a prion. It is a protean particle or a protean cell. And what it does is that it triggers bacteria and viruses. They begin to look at this, and then after the war, the work the Nazis had started was passed along into the U.S. military and intelligence community thanks to programs like Paperclip that were bringing all of thousands of Nazis over to this country. Ostensibly because we needed them for the Cold War against the Soviet Union. So then in the early 50s, they continued to work with this microplasm, this prion, and they managed to synthesize it and turn it in as a crystalline form. And they thought, what a wonderful biological weapon, because it wasn't easily detectable. Conventional doctors would look for a virus or a bacteria, and of course they couldn't find one. So it really puzzled them, and what a perfect biological weapon, because you see, the philosophy of biological weapons is that if you shoot the enemy soldier and kill him, well, that's just one soldier down. But if you incapacitate him, if you make him sick, then, you know, it takes two or three or four others to care for him, and you're tying down numbers of the enemy. That was the whole basic premise. And they had figured this out centuries ago, even in the Middle Ages, when they would fling diseased livestock into the besieged castle, you know, so they'd make everybody sick and they'd have to come out or die. So by the 80s, they had this pretty well worked out, and they figured they had, and they kept working with it. There was, I did stories back in the 70s, how they were trying to perfect a race-specific biological weapon. This, of course, was during Vietnam, and I think the idea was they wanted to spread something that would make the Oriental enemy sick, but would not affect our guys. Finally, we get into the 80s, and we find that they decided they had a buyer for this biological weapon, and that was none other than our friend at the time, Saddam Hussein. So they sold, about 1986, they sold batches of this prion to Saddam Hussein, who began to use it on his enemies, the Kurds and others, and then apparently, to their shock and horror, they found out that it was mutating, and it was beginning to go airborne, and therefore it was a menace to everyone it came in contact with. And of course, the next thing that happened was 1991-92, the Gulf War, and we sent all of our troops over there under Desert Storm, and they all came back sickened with all these strange maladies. Nobody could figure out what it was, and they began to refer to it as Gulf War syndrome. But the government, of course, denied that any such thing like that existed for about 10 years. And finally, they had to admit that, yes, there was something going on there. Now, what this prion does is work on the immunization system of the human body, and depending on each individual's proclivity and sensitivities, it would result in different things. And that's why in recent years we've had essentially a pandemic of this. But since it's not a virus or bacteria, and they have managed to keep this very quiet, but what we have seen is an astounding rise of these weird diseases and disorders like Alzheimer's. Oh, excuse me. Let me grab a water here. Here we go. Alzheimer's, bipolar depression, Crohn's colitis, chronic fatigue syndrome, Creutzfeldt-Jakob diseases, diabetes, dystonia, fibromyalgia, Huntington's, lupus, Lyme disease, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, schizophrenia. I mean, these have been known in the past, but nothing at the levels that we've seen in recent years. And it's because this prion, this microplasm, is at work. And of course, nobody can admit to this because nobody wants to admit the liability for bringing this into our culture. But we're now seeing this come to full fruition with this pending swine flu pandemic. And of course, now my problem is I lived through the swine flu pandemic of 1976.
Mm-hmm.
And I still recall that what happened was they had one soldier up at Fort Dix, and I remember that because at one time I was stationed at Fort Dix, who contacted this flu and then died. And that just set off a sky's falling reaction. And the Department of Health, Education, Welfare, and medical experts all said, oh, we're facing a major flu epidemic. They began to compare it to the flu epidemic of 1918, and pretty soon they were calling for the vaccination of all Americans. Now, at that time, insurance companies had not been totally taken over, and we were still in the last stages of the old republic, and the insurance companies refused to provide coverage to the vaccination manufacturers. So the government agreed to accept liability for claims. And once that had been taken care of, then they set up the National Influenza Immunization Program, which was started in October of 1976. They kept increasing these vaccinations until an estimated 40 million people were vaccinated between October of 76 and November of 77. However, in December, this National Influenza Immunization Program was stopped because more than 10 states were reporting cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome, known as GBS, in people who'd taken the vaccine. And by January 1977, more than 500 cases of GBS had been reported with 25 deaths. And so, with millions of dollars in lawsuits paid out, and many years later, the only epidemic in 1976 was the epidemic of vaccine injuries. Okay? And so this is what's leading a lot of people now to wonder about this latest epidemic and the fact that they are talking now about forced vaccinations. And, of course, I, for one, I can't think of anything more totally opposite of the idea of freedom than if the loss of freedom to determine what somebody's going to stick into your body. It's just absolutely amazing. And yet, actually now, the head of the health education has now signed off on it, and these vaccine manufacturers cannot be held responsible for whatever happens with this vaccine, and they're already talking about vaccinating, you know, the entire population. And yet, nobody's going to be held responsible, and they're already saying that they need months to test it, but they're going to have it ready in weeks. So how can they possibly have it done in time?
All right, let me ask you a question. Maybe you know and maybe you don't, but isn't the primary developer of this vaccine the same company that developed the vaccine for 1976, in which you had people getting sick and dying from the vaccine?
Yes, absolutely. And also, we find that, again, Donald Rumsfeld is in mixed up in this, because he's the one who, in 2005, pushed through the vaccine Thermoflu. And a huge conflict of interest, since he had a huge piece of that. Of course, this is the same Donald Rumsfeld who is CEO of Searle back in the 80s, pushed through, against the opposition of federal certification officers, aspartame.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back. On the other side of this break, more with Jim Mars. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, talk radio like nowhere else on earth, and Jim Mars, a journalist like nowhere else on earth. Jim, we had to cut you off in mid-sentence because the break was taking over. I want to give you the opportunity to finish your thought.
Right. Well, the thing is, in view of what happened in the 76 swine flu epidemic, where there was more deaths than disabilities caused by the vaccines than because of the flu, they've headed this off now, because in June, just this past June, the month before last, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Sebelius, signed a document granting immunity, legal immunity, to federal officials and vaccine makers. So in other words, if you take the vaccine and then you get some terrible disease, or you're totally incapacitated, well, I guess it's just tough. You're not going to be able to sue anybody.
Jim, do you know anything about the origin of this swine flu? Because when this thing first started up, there were reports by some doctors, there were reports in the news where you had some doctors saying that this did not appear to be a natural virus that it appeared to be engineered. All of that disappeared. Nobody's talking about that anymore. What do you know?
Yeah. Well, I just know common sense tells you that the odds that a European swine flu would somehow get mixed up with the thought to be extinct 1918 flu and then get mixed in with Asian avian flu, how does that happen by accident? And the answer, of course, is it doesn't. In fact, the 1918 flu had been eradicated. It was only in 1991 when they sent some doctors up to the Arctic and they disinterred the grave of an Inuit Indian woman who had died of the 1918 flu that they were able to recover that particular pathogen. And then they brought it back to Fort Beecher, where they've been concocting all kinds of stuff, including this mycoplasma I talked about earlier, which they then had mixed in with brucellosis. And then they mixed in everything else. And they have just definitely talked about, they've openly talked about how that they were trying to concoct something to pass along to people. Kurt Rahr was one of these Nazis that I talked about that came over here to work at Edgewood Arsenal, and in the book Operation Paperclip in the States, only a handful of the highest CIA officials knew that the CIA's technical services staff was paying the U.S. Army's Chemical Corps Special Operations Division about $200,000 a year in return for operational systems to infect foes with disease. So yes, they've been working on the ways to create some of these biological bad guys for years and years and years, and common sense will tell you, hey, how could all this be happening naturally? But the other thing is this. If the swine flu was on the up and up, and it really was a dangerous pandemic that was threatening to cause great devastation to the populations of the world, then you would think that all the doctors and all the Centers for Disease Control and all of the officials and all of the scientists would all be in agreement about this is serious and it comes from here and we need to watch for this, yada, yada, yada. But as you pointed out, Kevin, the people who even know exactly what's going on and have even worked with it are saying, wait a minute, this is a concocted deal. This is being overblown. So I think we're being set up. And like I said, here's my point. If they want to experiment on us, that's what they're going to try to do, okay? And I guess they're free to do that. When I say they, I mean the government and Centers for Disease Control and all these people who want to set themselves up as the people who know so much and want to tell us how to run our lives. Well, I guess they're free to do that, but see, I want to be free to say no. You're not going to experiment on me. I'll take my chances, okay? I'll take a lot of vitamin D3, and I'll take a lot of vitamin C. I'll keep my immunization system up, because what's a vaccination anyway? What they're doing is giving you a little bit of the disease and on the theory that your body will build up a resistance to it. But, of course, when they give you the disease and then people start dropping like flies, obviously there's a problem there.
The idea that they give you a little bit of the disease and you create an immunity to it is a pretty well-established medical fact. I mean, they've been doing this with vaccines for a long time. But if you've been soaked with prion beforehand,
you can't resist it.
Then you can't build up the immunity.
That's the point. And, Kevin, have you had any shows and programs there? Anybody come on to speak about chemtrails?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact.
You and your listeners are well aware of chemtrails.
Yeah.
Well, this is laying down this stuff into the air we breathe, barium, aluminum oxide, and various pathogens, possibly containing this prion, this mycoplasm. So we may not be able to, even if we get the vaccines, it may not be able to fend off the influenza.
Interesting that you mentioned the chemtrails.
Or worse yet, it may actually intensify it.
Well, it's very interesting that you mentioned the chemtrails, because we've had guests here on the show who have told us that some of this stuff has been analyzed in labs, and one of the things they find in it is both human hemoglobin and bovine hemoglobin. And you talked about about prion being mixed with brucellosis, which is a bovine disease.
Right. So there you go. See, there's all these telltale signs. Now, of course, the problem is that for the people who are listening to you and listening to me, is they're not going to hear this on CNN or ABC or even Fox. And so they're, you know, in a quandary. Gee, I don't know. Is anything real to this or what? But all I'd point out is that I can't speak for you, Kevin, but I can speak for me. I'm not under control of those five international corporations that control everything we see and hear.
Well, yeah, you're right. We think we're not under control, and we're going to try and not be under control, but I hear they've got camps for people like you and me.
That's right. And for anybody out there who's saying, oh, God, here they go again, talking about those FEMA camps again, you know, I would point out that the military just put out ads looking for confinement personnel, jailers, okay? They're trying to hire a whole bunch. Now, I wonder who they're planning to put in behind bars.
I saw that. It was on Monster.com. National Guard was advertising for that. I printed it out, but I don't have it in front of me. And it's for resettlement and detainment camps.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, yeah.
I suppose that's going to be about. Well, now, I can tell you what I could see as a possibility is if, you know, they come on television tomorrow and say, the swine flu has come back with a vengeance. We've had 20,000 deaths. Oh, my God, that would panic everybody, okay? So they say, in this medical crisis, you know, you're going to have to come and be vaccinated. And then if somebody finds out that you have not been vaccinated and you refuse to be vaccinated, then they'll send the cops out to get you. And your neighbors, instead of helping you defend your own personal body and your own property, they will be there encouraging the cops because they will think of you as a public danger.
Mm-hmm.
So they will help get you loaded on the trucks to take you to the quarantine camps. And
now,
I know it sounds very drastic, but hey, Kevin, it's all in place, isn't it? The camps are there. They're hiring the people. They're already prepping us for a pandemic. And it's the same people who sold us a bill of goods back in 76. So, you know, it's very possible.
Okay. I don't doubt that. But let me throw a couple of things in here and get you to respond. I've been getting email from people who have been contacting CDC and also the National Institutes of Health and asking, is this going to be a forced vaccination program? They have been told by CDC, no, it will be voluntary. So what would you say about that?
Say now, what do you expect them to say? They're not going to raise a public clamor when they don't have to. They'll wait until something hits, and then they'll say, okay, in this emergency, you must be vaccinated. Or better yet, like I said, it'll be public pressure. Your bosses, your employers, they'll be under pressure from the government, and they can come at them from the tax, from OSHA, from health services, all kinds of ways. There'll be pressure on you to go get vaccinated. And then they probably would say, okay, to protect the public, you're not going to be able to go in the grocery store until you show your health card and show that you've been vaccinated. There, they haven't forced you to be vaccinated, but if you want to go get food, you better take the shot. They got all kinds of ways to make it mandatory.
I think it's wristbands. I've been hearing that there's going to be a wristband put on each person that gets vaccinated.
Well, there you go, Kevin. There's a whole second career. You can make a million, man. Just right now, start fabricating fake wristbands.
Well, I bet those wristbands will carry a chip.
Oh, yeah.
And that chip will be encoded with probably your Social Security number or something like that. And it will have biometric information on it.
Right.
And bet it happens.
And chipping, now that you mentioned microchips, I'm not saying this is going to happen. I have no proof of that. But I do know that it is within the realm of current technology to produce a microchip transmitter with everything we want to know on something that's about half the size of a kernel of rice, and some of the more conspiracy-minded have suggested that that's going to be added to the vaccine. So when they give you the vaccine, then you'll also have an internal chip so they can track you. And these are individual. They'll each have an individual code and signal, mm-hmm. and they can track you anywhere you go.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Whether or not you've had the chip or not.
Those things are small enough to be deployed through an injection like that. They sure are.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I'm just saying it could, and it can. The technology's there.
Yeah, absolutely true. I'm not saying that it will either, but not the injection, but I bet you there will be some type of chipping to identify who's been vaccinated and who hasn't.
Right. They come up with something like that. And let me throw this in, and I think you'll agree with me. I don't want people to get the idea that we're saying that everybody's going to come and tell you to take a vaccination, or even the people who are administering the vaccinations, that these are somehow evil, nasty people. That's not the case. They don't know what's in there. They're never told what's in there, and they're only told what they're told, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there'll be people who will chase you down the street, hold you down, and inject you for the highest of purposes in their own mind.
Well, yeah, that's probably true. But this is also true. We've reached a point in this country where people are afraid to say no. I went into a Guitar Center to make a purchase. It was $14. $14 freaking. I was going to use a debit card, and they wanted to see my driver's license. Now, a debit card is, you have to put a PIN number in. So if I've got the PIN number, I must be the guy. They wanted to see my driver's license. And I said, absolutely not. And the guy said, well, why not? I said, well, let's see. I'm an American, and I'm supposed to be free. And I know the PIN number, and so therefore I can make the purchase. Furthermore, anybody I give my card to and tell them the PIN number, they should be able to make the purchase. And he said, well, you know, I don't make the policies. I just do what I'm told. And I said, well, let me ask you something. Do you think maybe that's how Hitler took over?
You got it.
Yeah. All right, we have to take a break. We come back a little bit more freedom with Jim Mars. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jim Mars. Jim, there was one other thing I said to the guy at Guitar Center. You know, when you go in there and you make a purchase, they ask you, and they enter it into their computer, your first purchase. They enter your name and your address and your phone number.
Uh-huh.
All right, so they're tracking you just because you've made a purchase there. They're already tracking you.
Right.
The first thing the guy does when you go in to make a purchase after that, a subsequent purchase, he asks for your name, you give him the name, and he looks it up on the computer, and then he starts ringing up whatever your purchase is. So I've already given my name and address. I'm standing there with a card that's got the same name on it. I've got the PIN number. And they want me to provide a driver's license. You know, I asked him, I said, well, what do you think about the Patriot Act? You like that? He said, oh, no, I don't. I said, well, you're participating with it. I said, you're helping build the Fourth Reich.
That's exactly right.
And so I just left my item there and went over to Fry's Electronics. I'm putting this on the air because I want people to not purchase things from Fourth Reichers. I want you to do business with people who still practice freedom. Went over to Fry's Electronics, bought the exact same thing for $2 less, and didn't show my ID.
Exactly. All you got to do is just say no. Although I'll have to admit, Kevin, sometimes maybe we just don't understand the situation. Here's my little story. At 1st of February, I was coming back from a trip to Egypt, and we flew out of Cairo Airport and flew to Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris, and then on to New York, landed at Kennedy, and then left the international terminal to go to the national terminal to get on a flight back to Texas. Well, when we go back in the national terminal, we had to go through security again. So here I am, and this little woman that's with the TSA says, "Take off your shoes." And I said, and I was very nice because, you know, if you're ugly to them, they can make you miss your flight at best and hold you a few days without charge at worst. But I said, "Ma'am," I said, "let me ask something." I said, "I don't understand this." I said, I've been flying for about 24 hours now. I said, "I came out of Cairo and landed in Charles de Gaulle in Paris and then came on over here to New York." And I said, "Those are two of the most security-conscious airports in the world." I said, "They checked my passport, and they had guys with AK-47s walking around." I said, "But they never made me take off my shoes. Why is it when I come back to the land of the free and the home of the brave, you're making me take off my shoes?" And you know what she said? She looked at me. She said, "'Cause you're in New Jersey." See? Sometimes we just don't understand.
Well, since you brought up TSA, they are one of my least favorite organizations. And I think they are absolutely worthless. And I'm speaking as a lifetime cop, okay? I retired from police work. I've been an international policeman. I've been an international police commander. And the TSA, Transportation Safety Administration, is a joke. So anyway, 100% of the time, it's not random, 100% of the time when I fly, I get the full tilt boogie from the TSA. And I flew from here to Los Angeles this year. And when I flew to Los Angeles, I went out to the airport here in Phoenix. They made me, you know, turn my pockets out, take my shoes off and all that. And then they said, "Now you can either, you have a choice. You can either have a strip search or a full body x-ray." I said, "I'll take the x-ray." So they took me over and stood me in front of the thing and took an x-ray. And then they made me stand sideways and took an x-ray. And then, now you got to get a load of this, Jim. This genius working for TSA, and I know he must be a genius because he was working for TSA, said, "Mr. Smith, are you wearing a money belt?" I said, "Well, you just took two x-rays. Did you see one?" And he didn't like that. He said, "Just answer the question." I said, "I just did." And he said, "You better put your seatbelt on now for this one, Jim." He said, "Are you wearing briefs or boxers?" I said, "Well, you just took an x-ray. What did you see?"
Hey, you should have told him, "Depends."
Well, I've determined that the next time, when they ask me if I'm wearing briefs or boxers, I think I'm going to say, "You know, I can't remember. Let's see." And I'm going to drop my drawers right there.
Oh, it's just nuts. It's just nuts. And you know what? You got these corporate jets that land at these private airports. I'm near Alliance here by Dallas-Fort Worth, which is just due west of Dallas-Fort Worth International. Or you can land at Meacham Field. Or you can land at any of these big airports, and they carry those big executive jets and stuff. Where's the TSA? They're not even there. Nobody checks them. They get on and off and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a terrorist with a pocket load of money and you know how to fly, you just rent a jet, and you can load it up with whatever you want to load it up with and go wherever you want to. That's how silly this whole thing is. And, of course, that brings us to the basic question of the war on terrorism. We're told we're supposed to be abjectly afraid of these foreign terrorists who are trying to slip weapons of mass destruction into our country because they hate our freedom and democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, well, if that's true, how come they haven't done one darn thing to secure the borders of this country? the southern border's a joke. It's a sieve. People running back and forth all the time, all kinds of people. In fact, there was a story in the Texas news media about 2 years ago where they did a study of the Border Patrol records, and they found out that the more than half of the people that had been arrested by the Border Patrol, and that's just the few they catch, about 65% of them were not Mexicans. They came from about 70 different countries.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of people coming in this country. But they won't secure the border, but we got to take off our shoes and drop our pants. I mean, it's worse than a joke. It was
well, and here's the real kicker. The real kicker is, let's say Jim Mars decides to take a vacation across the border in Mexico. When you come back, you have to have a passport to get in. To get back into your own country, you've got to have a passport. But if you're an illegal Mexican, well, you're a legal Mexican, but illegally coming across the border into the United States, so what? You're just in. You can come. It is insanity. Insanity.
Let's carry that one little step further. Let's say this. Illegal, and we're talking about illegal. I have no problem with anybody coming and wanting to be a citizen of this country. Just follow the law and do it the right way. Let's say the illegal alien and you have a car wreck,
mm-hmm.
and they haul both of you to the county general hospital, and they come up to him, and they find out he's an illegal alien. Do they toss him out? No, they go ahead and treat him, knowing full well they're never going to get paid for it. But now you, on the other hand, they say, find out you're a citizen, and they say you have any insurance, and if you say no, they're going to just toss you out. You don't get any treatment.
Well, that's because you're a citizen of the land of the free. That means work for free and be damn proud of it.
Unfortunately, that's about right. And I'm glad to hear that you're a former police officer, because I'm a former police reporter, and back in the days of the old Republic, I actually ran with the cops, rode with them, went with the homicide detectives into the crime scene. That's before all the radio and TV guys got in on the act, and they started having to keep everybody out, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's understandable. You can't have 20 people with cameras and lights and sound equipment tromping through your crime scene, but it sure closed off true reporting of what was going on. Because now they string that yellow tape, you know, keep everybody back 10 or 12 blocks. And then how do you know what actually happened in there? You don't, until the official spokesman comes and says, here's what happened. And as you probably are well aware of, Kevin, about 8 times out of 10, it's probably okay. Because if it's the neighborhood, dispute or the husband-wife fighting or a barroom shooting, they'll tell you the truth. But on those 2 times when it's political or when somebody of importance involved, how do you know you're getting the true facts? And the truth is, you don't.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to go back to prions for just a minute. We have a break. We got a break coming up in just a few seconds. When we come back from this break, I want to jump on prions again for a moment. And the question I want to ask is, as a journalist, and you got time during the break to think about this, as a journalist, how do you get newspapers and radio stations and television stations to report what you're writing about this? All right, we'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jim Mars. And Jim, before we went to break, I asked this question. When you write about something, you investigate, you write, and you've got a report ready to file about something like Prion. How do you find a media outlet that will put it out there for you?
Well, of course, that's a $64,000 question, and unfortunately, the answer seems to be you don't. And because the problem is not so much in the reporting, the problem is in the distribution of the information. Kevin, I know you cover UFOs as a topic on your show a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just take that. There's hardly a day goes by, and certainly not a week that goes by, that there's not a significant UFO sighting somewhere in the United States. Now, what's interesting is, in recent years, especially since last year in the Stephenville sightings, the thing that really surprised me about the Stephenville sightings was not that they had a UFO sighting, but the fact that the local and Texas media, and even some of the national media, actually treated it as a legitimate news story, which, of course, it was. But in the past, that information never went anywhere. And as a result, this is why so many people are still unable to accept any kind of reality about UFOs, because only on infrequent occasions do they hear something in their local media about somebody saw something in the sky, and it's easy enough to write them off and say, well, maybe they misidentified something, or maybe they're just making it up, and of course whatever it was is gone, and there's no hard proof other than their testimony. And yet, if the news media was truly doing its job, they would have a story saying, over the last month, we've had these reportings here, 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 and here. And then once people begin to realize that this is such a widespread phenomenon, they would begin to realize that there is a reality there and something's going on. So it's not so much the reporting. There are people on the Internet who've written good articles about the prion, about the brucellosis, and it's available in scientific journals, but it's not being put together, synthesized, as in good journalism, and then distributed widely to the population.
All right, now you said that all of the major news media in this country is owned by five corporations.
That's true.
Is there any real competition between those five?
No. No, because their owners belong to the same secretive societies. They're either on the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, or attend the secretive Bilderberg meetings. And they just don't know better than to talk about it. It's an unsaid thing. You know, we just don't talk about that. I don't know if you're old enough to remember, but when the desegregation came along, and that for a long time, especially in the South, they just wouldn't even report on it as if it was a non-story.
Yeah, I remember that. I do remember. So the owners of all five of these corporations are part of the CFR, the Trilateral, or Bilderbergers, right?
Right. And the five corporations, by the way, are Time Warner, AOL, Disney, Vivendi Universal, Viacom, and News Corporation. And there's one more I'd like to add, which is Bertelsmann, okay? Bertelsmann, a privately owned, family-owned corporation in Germany, control is the biggest publisher in the English language. They control virtually every major publisher in this country, with the only two exceptions I can think of are, as far as major publishers go, are my publisher, HarperCollins, and its wholly owned subsidiary, William Morrow, and those are owned by News Corporation, which is Rupert Murdoch.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the thing that's of concern there is that Bertelsmann, during World War II, is the largest publisher of Nazi propaganda to the German Wehrmacht. So it kind of makes you wonder, whoa, what's going on? And as far as this ownership goes and who these people are, let me just point out that in the George Herbert Walker Bush administration from 1989 to 1993, every member of his cabinet, with the exception of Dan Quayle, who I think was there for comic relief, and Secretary of State James Baker, that was one of Bush's old buddies, and one other, were members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Well, okay, so that was a Republican administration. So then we get the Democratic administration of Bill Clinton. every single member of his cabinet, with the exception of Secretary of Defense William Perry, was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. So then we get a change again. We go back to the Republicans, and we get the George W. Bush administration, and we all know them, Dick Cheney, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, Robert Gates. They're all members of the Council on Foreign Relations. But now, last November, we got change. We got Barack Obama, okay? Now let's look at his cabinet. Hillary Clinton, Janet Napolitano, Bill Richardson, Susan Rice, James Jones, Timothy Geithner, Larry Summers, Paul Volcker, and, oh, Robert Gates. He's in there again as Secretary of Defense. All members of the Council on Foreign Relations. So in other words, unless you're in the club, you do not get to run the country. And these tags of Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, that's just distraction. That's to keep people arguing, fighting with each other so they can't find out who's really running the show.
All right, so the people that are really running the show, you're saying, if I understand correctly, is the Council on Foreign Relations.
That's one of them, yes. And even then, let me be quick to add here, because I don't want people to think that every member, there's like, I don't know, counting their subsidiaries around the country, there's probably more than 3,000 members. And I'm not saying, nor do I believe, that all of those thousands of people are some sort of sinister conspirators, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But, like any other organization, and there's always a hardcore, there's always an inner core elite that actually do all the work and actually make all the policies, and everybody else just kind of falls in line. Those are the people I'm talking about. For want of a better expression, I'll just call them the New World Order crowd, because as George Herbert Walker Bush told us, they were ushering in a New World Order.
Well, you know, one thing a lot of people don't know about George Bush first, and as opposed to George Bush the second, but George Bush the first, up until he was the running mate with Ronald Reagan, was the chairman of the board of directors for the Council for Foreign Relations. He resigned from that in order to run with Reagan, because Reagan had been asked the question about, you know, are you a member of the CFR? And he said no. And they said, what about George? And he said, you'll have to ask him about that. So he quickly resigned and ran as not a member of the CFR.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And let me tell you what was going on there. For those of you with short memories or who were not paying attention at the time, during the campaigning in 1979 and 1980, leading up to the November 1980 election, Ronald Reagan was blasting George Herbert Walker Bush and pointing out that he was a member of these secretive organizations and these Wall Streeters and this liberal Eastern elite that were trying to run everything. And he pledged he would not have George Herbert Walker Bush in his administration. So then they get to the Republican National Convention, and Ronald Reagan gets it on the early ballot. That's a cinch. So the only question was, who's going to be his vice president? And there was a big argument going on. And on Wednesday night, in the middle of the convention, at 11:30 at night, Reagan comes rushing back into the hall because the national news commentators, who are all employees of these five corporations I mentioned, were beginning to talk about the dream ticket. They were going to run Ronald Reagan as president and Gerald Ford, our unelected president, as vice president. But of course, and they were adding that since Gerald Ford had already served as president, he should be able to select half his cabinet. So in other words, Reagan was presented with the idea of only half a government and half a cabinet. So he rushes into the convention, 11:30 at night, and says, I want to put all these rumors to rest. He said, I named George Bush. And off they went. This is how heavy-handed politics are played. Now, let's go back even further than that. When Richard Nixon got into office, and he was put in office with Nazi money, You read all about this in my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. And he immediately began to clean house in the Republican National Committee. He said, fire them all except George Herbert Walker Bush. And he named Bush as head of the National Republican Committee. And Bush and Nixon then began to pack the Republican Party through these ethnic committees with people with Nazi backgrounds, all right, Eastern Europeans and some actual Nazis, German Nazis. And this is when they turned the Republican Party from the party of constitutional conservatives to neoconservatives, neocons, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you hear the term neocon, just understand that that actually only means as a new, less offensive term for national socialist.
All right. Now, I'm going to open the telephone lines here in just a moment. Before we do that, I've got one more thing I want to hit here, and that is this question. Many of the people in this audience have seen and are aware of something that came out a long time ago called Alternative 3.
Mm-hmm.
In Alternative 3, which purported to be fictional but looked very factual, there was a plan to depopulate the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to ask you, as an investigative reporter, do you think that plan exists, and are we watching it being implemented?
Well, it hasn't been implemented yet because they're still around. Of course, Alternative 3 basically is that they're going to go off-planet. But, of course, if they're going to do that, they're going to have a whole lot more room than just those little space shuttles that we're still launching out of Cape Canaveral down there. So that would mean that they would need some sort of a secret space fleet, okay? Something that nobody knows about and something that they can keep quiet about, because if you ever remember the old science fiction movie When Worlds Collide, as the other world got closer and closer to ours and it looked like they were going to crash, you know, just all decorum and law and order fell apart and everybody was fighting for a place on the escape ship. So they can't have that. So they're not going to tell anybody that this is their plan. But, of course, to build a spaceship secretly, they can do it secretly. I mean, you know, there were something 22,000-plus working on the Manhattan Project on the atomic bomb, and nobody talked, and it was a secret until they set it off. So, yeah, they can keep secrets. But where are they going to get the money, okay? And I would submit to you that you go back and check, and you're going to find that on September the 10th, 2001, the day before 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld was forced to admit publicly that the Pentagon could not account for $2.3 trillion, many times over that year's defense budget. Well, what happened to all that money? Well, who would have been assigned to find out and track what happened to that money? The Army's accounting office. But the next day we had the attacks of 9/11, and something blew up at the Pentagon. And who suffered the most casualties? The Army's accounting office. And what have we heard after that about this missing $2.3 trillion? Nothing.
Wow.
Did it go to a space fleet? I don't know, but that could account for that missing money.
All right, we're going to open up the telephone lines and allow our audience to call in with any comments or questions. Let me give the telephone numbers out. 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. Those are the two telephone numbers. If you live outside of the USA, you live outside of Canada, the numbers will work. You can call from anywhere in the world. It will work. But if you're outside of the USA and Canada, you also can go over to my website, click where it says flash message, and you can send me a flash message. I'll read it, and we'll get our guests to comment on it. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello there, Jim.
Howdy.
Yeah, I'm a heavy researcher into the New World Order agenda. Also, I've done a lot of research, and I've read three of your main books, Rise of the Fourth Reich, Rule by Secrecy, and Alien Agenda. Great works, by the way.
Thank you.
You know, I want to go back to the swine flu and what's going on right now, and especially when it comes to the vaccinations. I honestly feel that this is the last straw before they finally declare martial law. I'm quite convinced of it, simply because of this. I don't know if you read this news article by Greg Evanson from the June the 30th a couple of weeks ago, where he said that out of Kansas, a former Kansas State trooper, that there was a plan for vaccine bracelets at roadblocks, that they were actually going to have roadblocks and force people to take the vaccines, and that those that refused to take the vaccine and the bracelet, that they would be sent to what they're calling a quarantine camp, and of course, naturally, they're run by FEMA. But you know,
right?
Yeah.
Yep, and it's always, you know, to save the children or to save somebody. You know, they never say we're just going to round you up and put you in a camp. I mean, people would resist that. So they've always got to have some kind of an event to say that for your own protection, you got to give up your guns, you got to go to the camps, you got to, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I'm with you. I see that they're lining this up perfectly. All it's going to take is just for them to trigger something, and off we go. But you know what? Let me tell you, Kevin, let me add this. When I hear about that, and then I look at these news reports about how, you know, Congress took a break, and a lot of them are back in their home districts, and they're getting booed. Not only are they getting booed, they're getting jeered, and in some cases run off the podium, in some cases almost chased down the street. And I can't help but think of Admiral Yamamoto's quote after the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor and pretty much obliterated our Pacific Fleet, and the Japanese general staff was just jumping with joy and exhilaration. And Admiral Yamamoto said, "Well, I fear that we have awakened a sleeping giant." And, of course, it didn't take but just two, three more years to prove him right. And I'm just afraid that as these New World Order people continue to push and push and push, I think they're going to be awakening a sleeping giant.
Yeah, I think you may be right. Kevin, thank you so much for the call. 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. Now, well, let's take this call, then I'll ask the question. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is Stefan from Quebec City. How are you?
I'm fine.
Kevin, my question to Jim Mars is, how likely is it that he thinks that this might be part of an ET-based depopulation program?
Okay, some of that cut out. How likely do I think that's an ET what?
ET-based depopulation program.
Ah, well, okay, now you're really getting into it, because it's obvious that some of the decisions that are being made and pushed through Congress and set as government policy are simply not beneficial to the public of the United States. In fact, some of them seem like they're not beneficial to the human race as a whole. And I've got to admit, it certainly makes one wonder about who are these people that are trying to push this horrendous agenda, and are they even us? So, you know, but that's... I guess we'll just have to find that out if we can ever find out what's really going on with the UFOs.
All right. That's the question that I was going to ask you, is do you see any connection between this prion deployment, development and deployment, any connection at all between that and an alien agenda? I guess you've just answered it. That was the question I was going to ask.
Well, okay, but let's go back to the Iron Mountain report, which people try to say was a phony, but I have now concluded it was not, since Colonel Prouty, I believe it was, told me that he was working with Henry Kissinger at the time, and Kissinger would tell him about going off to Iron Mountain and working on this report. So I think it actually happened. In the Iron Mountain report, they stated that the only real foundation for government control is the war powers. So that war was necessary as a societal control. And they even offered up, they said, if peace breaks out and looks like we're going to have peace on Earth, then they'd have to come up with some other control mechanism. And they even offered up the suggestion that it could be a threat from space. And apparently they pushed this idea off on Ronald Reagan, because you may recall that President Reagan went before the United Nations and said, perhaps we could all work together if there was a threat from space. Now that leads us to Carol Rosen, who was a very high-placed female executive with Fairchild Industries. But back in the early 70s, she was working as an assistant to Wernher von Braun, the Nazi rocket scientist that we brought over here and is pretty much acknowledged as being the father of our space program. And she said von Braun told her way back in the early 70s, he said, the current enemy of choice is the communist. He said, but it's all a lie. He said, and when it doesn't work anymore, then we're going to have international terrorists probably coming from the Middle East. Well, here we are right now with that. And he said, that's a lie. And he said, when that doesn't work anymore, he said, it will be a threat from space. He says, but I'm here to tell you right now, that's a lie. And so there you go. At the heights of power that we're talking about, and it goes far beyond the presidency of the United States, they know that we are not alone in the universe. They know and are preparing to fabricate what would appear to be an invasion from space or a threat from space. And if you'll read their own material carefully, these self-styled globalists, they say that the one real problem on the Earth is that there's too many people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Henry Kissinger calls us useless eaters, and they want to depopulate the Earth. And this is going to be done through diseases, AIDS, swine flu, E. coli, all this stuff that 40 years ago nobody had ever even heard of, and it's going to be done through starvation, like in Somalia and in sub-Sahara Africa.
All right, we have to step away for break, Jim. We'll be back, folks, right after this. More of your calls and flash messages. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Jim Mars. The telephone line is open. The telephone numbers are 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. If you live outside the USA and Canada, you can use our flash message feature. If you don't want to make that international long-distance call, just go to my website, scroll down, you'll see the link that says Flash Message, and you can send one to me. All right, Jim, let's go to this Flash Message from Australia. Andrew says, Jim, my hat goes off to you for all the work you do. I applaud you, pal. Questions I'd love to ask the controlled orchestrated media. Number one, go up to the Baxter Pharmaceutical Plant in Mexico and ask them there how they're going with that H1N1 virus. Number two, why dig up people in permafrost to get a virus that was considered abolished unless someone has a sinister plot for it? Number three, Bilderberg. Well, it's Google everything. Even the CEO of Google gets an invite last year. What are you up to, Bilderberg? And then he says, we're in a lot of trouble, ladies and gentlemen. We don't want to see a Fourth Reich spreading its tentacles over the globe. The mainstream media is full of rot. Could say more and cannot be trusted. It's being used as well as disguised as a tool to trick the masses. All right, not any questions there, but some observations. What do you say about that, Jim?
Well, we've actually covered some of that in this program. Like I said, if you read their own publications, they want to get rid of a bunch of us. That's true. And then he mentioned Baxter Labs. I want people to consider this. And this just happened a couple of months ago or so. Baxter Labs was sending out supposed anti-flu vaccines to 18 different countries. And thank God in the Czech Republic, some of their people decided they'd test it to see if it had any bad side effects. And so they injected some ferrets and they all died. Okay. And so then they found out, they did more closer inspection, and they found out that this Baxter anti-flu vaccine was actually carrying a very virulent and deadly strain of flu. Were they trying to start a pandemic? And Baxter says, oh, gee, I guess we made a mistake. But the key thing here is, what's happened there? Has anybody from Baxter been called on the carpet? Have they been prosecuted? Have they been brought into court for this gross negligence at best? No, nothing. In fact, Baxter's the one of them that's going to be producing all this anti-flu vaccine that we're supposed to take. It's just incredible. Now, Kevin, you said you're a former police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a question.
All right.
If they pass orders to the local police and deputy sheriffs to come out to the individual's homes and force them to take a vaccine, or go in their house and confiscate their guns, are they going to follow orders? Or
yes.
Are they going to serve and protect?
The majority of them will follow orders. That I wish I could say differently, but the fact is, the majority of the police officers and the majority of the military are going to follow orders, because to refuse an order is certain death for your career. That means no income. That means no other police department's going to hire you. It means that now you're not going to be able to pay your mortgage. You're not going to be able to pay for your car. Your kids are going to go hungry. Yeah, they're going to follow orders.
Yeah, and they're not going to get their pension.
Mm-hmm. Now, and let me say this.
I think you're absolutely correct. So what if those of us who know what's going on, what if we take it upon ourselves to start chatting up our local police officers and our local deputies, get to know them, let them know that we're just neighbors, community members just like them, and we care about our families just like they do, and start trying to inform them of the reality of what's going on, so when those orders are starting to be formulated, maybe they can say, hey, we don't want any part of this.
Well, I would not discourage doing that, but I also would not, I would be remiss if I did not tell you that it's too late. And what they will be doing, there are a few, a small percentage, that are constitutional, and they're going to say no, and they're going to suffer the consequences. There are some. But the majority are going to follow the orders. It's too late. For the past 15 years or so, the local law enforcement across the country has been federalized. It's been federalized in terms of training. It's been federalized in terms of funding. And so it's one of those, okay, here's the order from the Fed, and I don't mean the bank, but I mean the federal government. Here's the order. This is what's going to happen. And police chief, if you refuse to implement this, we're going to pull our funding from your department.
Okay.
Well,
he says, okay, we can do without your funding.
Well, that would be good, and there will be a few, but the majority will not. The majority will continue to be mush-headed lapdogs as they are today.
Mm-hmm.
And they will do it. Now, for those who are predisposed to follow the orders, and that I think would be the majority, here's what's going to happen when you start chatting them up. They're going to be collecting information from you.
And you'll end up on a list.
You'll be on the list. People who talk about the Constitution too much are a threat to national security. Just ask the FBI, ask Homeland Security, ask Janet, I want open borders, Napolitano.
Exactly.
I am considered by those folks to be a threat to national security. Benjamin Franklin would have been a threat to national security. So would George Washington. So would John Hancock. So would Patrick Henry. The very people who founded this country are a threat to the current thinking in government.
Yep, and especially Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
Yep.
And so anyone who still believes in the Constitution, anyone who still believes in land of the free, home of the brave, is a threat to the current thinking in Washington, D.C. And sadly, in my opinion, the largest enemy of the Constitution in existence today is Congress. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. Stefan again. I got cut off last time, so I'll just keep my second question very short.
All right.
Mr. Mars, if this is a depopulation program, I know that Benjamin Fulford, the former Forbes editor out in Japan, said that Eastern powers would step in and start taking out Illuminati leaders one by one if they were trying to force world population down. Have you heard of this? So what's your opinion on that?
Yes, I'm aware of what you're talking about, and you know, it's interesting because I think he came out with that about two summers ago, and he said that there were some Asian organizations that had passed the word that if they didn't stop what they were doing, that they were going to send out, I think, ninjas or something, and they were going to go after them. And of course, that's a little bit stout, but then look at what's happened to the world economy since then. So, and it's almost like they are in disarray. So it's enough to make you wonder if Benjamin Fulford wasn't telling the truth.
Well, interesting. Thank you very much. Great.
All right. Kevin. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is serious stuff. You know, I guess.
Hey, Kevin. Let me just tell you how quick all this has taken place. When I started off as a newspaper reporter, I think I mentioned earlier in the program, I just ran with the cops. You know, I had a little trench coat, a little hat, and usually most people just thought I was another cop, so they didn't say anything. And I'd just go in, I'd make my notes, and I'd take down, you know, whatever the story was. And so just in a short time, about 10 or 15 years there, while I was doing that, early on, if the federal authority showed up, FBI shows up, they would come with their hat in their hand. Officer, I'm with the FBI, and I would like to offer you my help. You know, could I help you on this case? And, of course, you know, poor overworked detectives and policemen and stuff, generally they say, sure, man, because they'll take all the help they can get. And just over a short period of about 10 to 15 years, that all flopped. Until by the time I was stepping out of my newspaper role, the FBI would show up and say, okay, step back, get out of the way, we're taking over this case. And nobody was saying anything. Did you ever have that experience?
When I was a cop here in the United States, the FBI could not come in and take over anything. And legally, they cannot now. A U.S. Marshal can. But the FBI cannot. The FBI is not legally and constitutionally law enforcement. There's only one legal, constitutional law enforcement agency at the federal level, and that's the U.S. Marshals. Everything else is a scam, and as far as the Constitution is concerned. I know they do try to take over things at various agencies around the country. I've got friends that have told me about it, that are cops, that have told me what's happened. But you see, the FBI did not have any arrest powers. They could get a warrant issued, But then they had to get a local cop to go with them to execute that warrant. And I hear that now it's not that way. And that's not an improvement. That's a degradation of freedom. That's we've been watching freedom melt in the sunshine for a number of years now. All right, very quickly here, let me see how much time I've got. Yeah, let's see if we can get this in. This is from Blues in Australia. It says, "Hi, Mr. Kevin Smith and Mr. Jim Mars. Great show. And what was the point of those brave men who died fighting on the beaches of Dunkirk, North Africa, Italy, Normandy, etc., if those Nazis escaped Judgment Day and managed to install the foundations of another Nazi New World Order? Those people at the top of the cow heap are full of swamp gas." Good point.
Well, there's a pretty good, very good point.
Mm-hmm.
And all I'll say is I'm going to look here. This is the dedication of my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. I said, this book is dedicated to my father, my uncles, and all the Allied soldiers who sacrificed so willingly to serve their country in World War II. They deserve better.
They do. Our children and grandchildren deserve better. But in order for them to get anything better than what we've got, people have to stop being mushheads. They've got to start thinking, and they've got to start thinking about the Constitution. You got to stand up and do something. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back in just a few minutes with Jim Mars. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Jim Mars, and we're on final approach, folks. We just have a few minutes left. Jim, I want to make certain that I complete the thought that I was saying as we went to break. When I say you've got to stand up, you've got to do something, I am not saying that you've got to resort to violence. But you know something? It's been interesting to me to watch. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm sane. And so it's been interesting for me to watch these town hall meetings where these politicians who've, you know, I've been saying, you know, they've had their head so far up their rear for so long, they haven't seen daylight in years, totally out of touch with the people they claim they represent. And it has been a shock for them to be booed off of the stage. It's been a shock for them to have their constituents stand up and say, "You have lost the faith and goodwill of the American people." And I've been saying on this show, I've been saying that whenever the governed no longer consider the government relevant, that government is out of business. And it really looks like they're just about out of business.
Well, that's exactly what it seems like. And I'm trying to, let's see here. Here we go. What I want to do is not try to give you a big history lesson, but I simply want to quote from the Declaration of Independence.
All right, let me just say this to the caller that's on hold. Just hang in there. We're going to bring you up in just a moment. Go ahead.
Okay. It says that we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal. They're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, and that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute a new government, laying on its foundation such principles and organizing its powers in such forms as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. So there you have it. This is what this country was founded on. The colonists were not fighting the British. They were British. We fought our own government because it was tyrannical.
Mm-hmm.
As I said earlier in the program, these people in Washington better start getting a clue, or they're going to find out that they have awakened a sleeping giant.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi, how you doing, Jim?
Good. Oh, you said, how are you doing, Jim? All right, Jim, how are you doing?
Yeah, I just would like to say that, you know, even back when our founding fathers did that stuff, you know, and turned down the Tea Party and stuff, actually when we got a new government settled, you know, the first thing they did was try and put a tax on liquor, you know, which caused a great upheaval, you know, and that was struck down, you know, until after the Civil War, and then they did it again. So they've been backdooring us, you know, from the very first. You know, I'm proud of our founding fathers, but yet I still think that they were also part of the problem. And we, you know, lost our way is so true. I mean, you know, that's what we broke away from the British for, is, you know, from the unfair taxation and religion stuff, and then, you know, like I said, we turned around and, you know, first thing I did was try and do a liquor tax.
But it's our fault, and the reason it's our fault, you see, when they tried to do the unfair liquor tax, there was rebellion against it. You may or may not be aware of the fact that there was a time when Congress had to flee Washington, D.C. for a period of about 6 months because they were refusing to pay the veterans of the American Revolution their pensions.
Yeah.
And so the veterans of the American Revolution said, heck, we were an army once, we're an army again, and they marched on Washington. Now, I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that we ought to take up arms against the government. Absolutely not saying that. What I am saying is that there does have to be a huge grassroots uprising of opinion and people speaking out and absolutely refusing to sit down and shut up. Now, we have in recent history an example of that working. You had Washington, D.C., absolutely refusing to do anything about this southern border. A group started up called the Minutemen, citizens, who said, okay, that's fine. We own the government, and we own the border. And if our employees in Washington won't do the job, we will. Congress almost diarrheaed to death over the Minutemen going down on the border. They made all kinds of promises. They said, we're going to build the fence and all of this. Now they're undoing all of that, which we knew they would because, you know, if it gets elected, it lied. And, you know, but you had there such a national outcry about the border that Congress caved in and said, we'll do something. Of course, now they're undoing it. And they even say they're going to tear down part of the fence. But, you know, anyway, the point is, does it work? Yeah, it works. But then we all go back to sleep, and Congress gets back on its left-handed Kool-Aid, and here we go again.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin, we're running out of time here, and I really just want to make this sincere and impassioned plea. Everyone that's listening and everybody who was in on this conversation tonight, Do not go out and commit any violent acts, because then you're playing into their hands.
Absolutely.
Exactly what they want. Do not do that. But that doesn't mean that when they come to your house or come onto your property that you cannot defend yourself, because you can. and Kevin Smith, as a former police officer, will back me up on this. If you feel like your life or safety are in danger, you have the right to defend yourself, even against authorities acting under color of law.
Yes, but I am going to say this, too. If you do defend yourself, you will lose. You may, I mean physically, because they'll just keep calling more badges and more guns until they outgun you. But you know, you can make a stand philosophically. You can, you can say you can say it to them and to the news reporters. You men are doing something that's unconstitutional. You are violating my rights. I'm going to go with you willingly. I'm not going to fight you, but you're violating my constitutional rights. And when this is over, I'm going to own everything you ever hoped to own.
Right. That's under a system of justice. But unfortunately, we don't have a, we have the best system of justice that money can buy.
Yeah.
That's the fact of it, okay? So what I'm saying is, no, I do not advocate violence. Do not go out and commit violent acts. But if they're trying to come in your home, defend yourself. And yeah, Kevin's probably right. You'll probably lose, but you know what? After a few, after several times like that, they're going to start counting up the costs, and they're going to say, we're not sure this is worth trying to implement this policy. There's too much resistance.
All right, I hate to do it, but we're out of time. Okay, folks, I want to thank everybody that called in. Important stuff. Maybe related to some of the stuff we're seeing with UFOs, maybe not, but worth considering. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.